First, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to this extended program and for giving me the opportunity to present my work at this conference. Even after I told Miguel that my talk is not really in the mainstream of the conference, he was kind enough not to disinvite me. There are many collaborators to this work. The group from Grenoble, Anna Minguzzi, Sergei Skipetrov, and Bart van Tichelen. Peter Hensler is a student from Bonn who came over for a visit to the Technion. Well, actually, by now he already earned his degree of Doctor of Philosophy and he quit physics. He's working now for some insurance company. John Choker is here, and there are two graduate students. Two graduate students from the Technion, Leonid Belin and Evgeny Gurevich. I put here down few recent reviews for anybody who wants to get the big picture of the field. So disorder is, of course, a very old theme in solid-state physics, and a lot of knowledge has been accumulated over the years. Some of this knowledge can be directly transferred to the field of cold atoms, but there are some issues which are specific for cold atomic systems and which are not usually encountered in solid-state physics. For one thing, the potential for atoms is made by lasers. Optically, this is atoms are of course neutral, but they do react to gradient of light intensity. So this is a schematic setup for making a random potential for atoms. Light from laser is transmitted through a diffusive plate, which is basically a piece of material with a randomly fluctuating refraction index in space. And then on the other side, the transmitted light creates what is called a speckle pattern, a very intricate, essentially random pattern of light intensity. One can watch this pattern on some screen, on observation plane, and it turns out that the correlation function for the light for this speckle pattern is long range. J1 is the first order Bessel function, so the whole thing falls off as a power law with oscillations. R0 is the correlation radius of this potential, lambda is the wavelengths of the light, z is the direction from the distance from the plate, and d is the aperture, the diameter of this plate. Another thing that this speckle potential is anisotropic. The correlation length in the z direction is different from that along the plane. To summarize, light intensity acts as the potential for atoms, and the correlation of this potential, correlation function, here I subtract the average, is given by this expression, V naught square. This is in two dimensions. Okay, so the random potential is characterized by two quantities. Its strength, V naught, this is the typical height of the barriers and the depth of the potential wells. And R naught is the correlation radius. Instead of R naught, one can define what is called correlation energy, H bar square over M R naught square. The properties of the random potential depends strongly on the ratio between V naught and R naught. One case is when V naught is much smaller than E naught. Then E naught is the largest energy scale. And if we take a particle with energy smaller than E naught, one can immediately see that the wave number of the particle times R naught is much smaller than one. This means we're in the white noise limit. Correlations are not important because the Braille wavelengths of the particle is much larger than the correlation length of the potential. In this case, it is very easy to estimate the mean free path. This is the estimate. So the mean free path is inversely proportional to square of the strength of the potential and to the cube of correlation length. This estimate is in three dimensions. And I assume, just to simplify the discussion, an isotropic three-dimensional speckle. Okay, for this estimate to be consistent one needs the standard condition of weak disorder, KL, much larger than one. In terms of the energy, it means that the energy of the particle is larger than this energy. I call it epsilon C, and this is basically the mobility edge for the random potential, which for the particle, which separates extended state from localized states in three dimensions, or strong and localization from weak in two dimensions. Well, I was talking now so far about single particle, but the same will, of course, go through for Fermi system, at least in the absence of interactions. But mostly I'll be talking about bosons. So for a system of interacting bosons, the relevant quantity is chemical potential, mu. If this chemical potential is above this critical energy, then there is a single coherent condensate. If it is below, then it is a fragmented condensate, or maybe even just small clusters of bosons. I arrived to this estimate going from high density or high energy to low density. Well, the critical density is given by this expression, because I can translate chemical potential into density. A is scattering length. But the same picture can be arrived at by moving from low density to high density. This was done by Boryshklovsky and in much more detail by Falcon, Atterman, and Pokrovsky. So in this case, one starts with low density bosonic system. Then simply initially you have cluster of atoms in potential wells. When the density increases, of course, interactions here are crucial for bosons, because in the absence of interactions, all bosons would go into the lowest potential well. That would be the end of it. But at the moment when we switch on interaction, the bosons spread, of course, at finite density, spread across the entire system. And then when the density is increased, the system develops fragmented condensate, the kind of lake of condensate here and there, and above this critical energy, the lakes merge and form a single coherent condensate. Well, the other limit is V naught much larger than E naught. Well, here the picture is more intuitive. The potential is very smooth, and the good starting point is to go to the semi-classical limit, and that corresponds to the percolation problem. But the actual quantum transition happens not at the percolation energy EP, but at somewhat larger energy, because interference is still important. Okay, so far I was discussing Bose atoms in the presence of disorder in equilibrium. Now I will discuss problems out of equilibrium, making thus contact to the main subject of the present conference. So let me first describe free expansion of Bose-Einstein condensate. Initially, the condensate is prepared in a harmonic trap. Well, also, actually, in my previous discussion, there must have been some trap, which I did not mention. because the condensate is always confined by some harmonic trap. So initially it's in equilibrium. I here assume zero temperature, so it's in the ground state. It is well described, and under typical experimental conditions, it is well described by the Gross-Petayevsky equation, the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. This cubic term corresponds to interactions, nonlinearity in this equation. And again, the interactions here are very important, because in the absence of interaction, all particle would go into the ground state of this harmonic potential. But in fact, the size of the condensate is much, much larger. It is not this A naught, which is the size of the ground state wave function, but it is R naught, which is related to chemical potential of the condensate, which is much bigger, again, in a typical experiment where you have something of the order 1 million atoms in the trap. So the density of the condensate is given by this expression. It's the inverted parabola. Simply the density follows the potential. The potential is low in the middle of the trap, the density is high, and then it goes to zero at the edges. And this is the condensate wave function in equilibrium. Now assume that at some instant t equals zero, the trapping potential is switched off. The condensate goes on free expansion. And the expansion is described by this time-dependent Gross-Petayevsky equation. So it's still nonlinear, but there is no potential here now because it's free expansion. It is more instructive to rewrite this equation in terms of condensate density N and the dynamic phase S. The phase is related to the velocity of the condensate is gradient of this phase. Well, this is the expression we saw yesterday for superconductors. But it's basically the same thing for superfluid, for the condensate. Okay, so these are the two equations. Looks like hydrodynamics, continuity equation, and sort of an earlier equation. And they have a self-similar solution. One can simply check that these equations are satisfied by these expressions, that the condensate expands, preserving its shape of the inverted parabola, but it develops now flow, kinetic energy, velocity field. And everything is expressed in terms of this scaling factor B, which satisfies a simple differential equation. So initially, there is no velocity, but under the expansion, the interaction energy, this nonlinearity, which was dominating in the equilibrium, will be converted into flow energy. And after this characteristic time T naught, which is the inverse frequency of the trap, expansion will become basically linear. Nonlinearity can be neglected. So this is the main conclusion from this story, that there is typical time T naught which separates between two stages of the expansion. First stage is kind of an explosion dominated by nonlinearity. The second stage is linear. Okay, so the only thing to remember from this transparency is that after this time T naught, the wave function, the condensate wave function, has now a lot of kinetic energy. So it has rapid oscillations, this oscillating term. I call this function phi of R. So now the same thing, but in the presence of disorder. So the condensate is in the trap, and some disordered potential is created, this speckle potential all around. If the speckle potential is weak, we can neglect the effect of the potential in equilibrium. Or maybe a conceptually cleaner way to do this, simply first assume there is no random potential. We release the condensate from the trap, it expands for this time T naught, and then we switch on the potential. The important thing that the expansion still can be divided into these two steps. In the first step, it's dominated by non-linearity, and disorder is not important at that step, at that stage. And then after that, the expansion is linear, and disorder is important. So now we are in business, because we only have to study the, after this first stage of expansion, we have to study the Anderson problem, linear Schrodinger equation in the presence of random potential. So I want again to stress that only the trap potential is switched off. The random potential remains intact. So the only special thing here that usually we are interested in solid state physics and solutions at some fixed energy, which is the Fermi energy, and we want to understand whether wave functions are extended or localized. But here it's somewhat different problem. It's a problem of evolution of a wave packet, the initial wave packet, but this is at time T naught. It is given by that function phi of r with a lot of oscillation. So it's not, the initial packet is not really Gaussian simple packet, but something more complicated. But anyway, it's a linear problem. We can study this. And these kind of problems were discussed in the 80s. Some people in the audience are old enough to remember these developments and even to participate in them. So the main hero of this theory is this quantum diffusion kernel, P of epsilon. And it controls the dynamic of the wave packet. So the density of the condensate at later times can be written in this form, this quantum diffusion kernel convoluted with Wigner function. So the information about the initial state of this condensate is encoded in this function phi of r, or in the corresponding Wigner function. So this, as I told you, the this diffusion kernel have been worked out in the 80s, and some people, one of those people now fall asleep, but. But this kernel had been thoroughly studied, so it depends on this energy epsilon. For epsilon larger than epsilon c, it's basically standard diffusion, but with diffusion coefficient would depend on the energy. And for energy smaller than EC, epsilon c, it's something completely different. This is the signature of localization. Xi of epsilon is the localization energy. So maybe it's time to show one experiment coming from the group of Aspect. They experiment with Bose-Einstein condensates, which propagate in the presence of disorder. So maybe 2 years ago, they observed one-dimensional Anderson localization in these matter waves. Well, that doesn't seem like a big intellectual challenge, but it simply shows how good control they have on this system. And now more recently, they did two dimensions. And they are planning also to do to do Anderson localization even in three dimensions. But so what is shown here is exactly what I described. You first they prepare it in equilibrium and in harmonic trap. It's two dimensions, so the condensate is always confined by strong confinement in the z direction, and it only expands in xy plane. And then they let it expand for 50 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds. So 50 milliseconds is the blue curve, and 200 milliseconds is the red curve. And they take the image. But the disorder here is weak, so there is no localization, but they observe an anisotropic diffusion. So you see, it's not a Gaussian, has a cusp. That's because the diffusion coefficient depends on energy, and this initial wave packet has many Fourier components. Okay, so this is some plots for this is theory, partly analytic, partially numerics. And here what is shown is the evolution of this wave packet. We choose some point in space far from the initial trap and watch the atomic clouds coming to this point as a function of time. So this is the signature of what is called anomalous diffusion, close to the transition. One can estimate, so just to summarize this picture, it's you release this cloud from the trap and you have disorder, broad Fourier components in this wave packet after the first stage of expansion, and therefore part of the condensate is localized. It will get stuck not far from the trap, and the other part diffuses away by simple diffusion and by anomalous diffusion, whatever you have there. So I have two comments about expansion of a Fermi gas, but maybe I'll skip them and move to the last part of my talk. Free expansion of a BEC from a disorder trap. So now the setup is somewhat different than from the previous one. The condensate is prepared in this trap, and also disorder is applied to the trap. And initially, the condensate is in equilibrium, or again, we're discussing here actually grounds in the ground state. Now at some time t zero, all the potential are switched off. So the condensate goes on the free expansion. And the question how the initial configuration of the condensate in the trap will show up after some time of expansion. So the interesting thing here is that even if we have small density modulations in equilibrium, in the trap, upon the expansion, the condensate will develop large density modulation, and even it can become fragmented. The mechanism for this is the imprint of a phase. So on the first stage of expansion, small density modulation, they will imprint a phase on the condensate. And after that, the fluctuations of the phase will lead to strong fluctuation in the density of the condensate. So the whole thing is described by these two equations that I already showed to you. So theta is the condensed phase, and v is the velocity related to the gradient of this phase. So there are different regimes. That what I was telling before, that after the first stage of expansion, there is the imprint of phase, and this is the related velocity. The geometry here was quasi 1D, so it's a cigar-shaped condensate. Initially, it was in the trap, and then all the potentials were switched off, and it started expanding. It developed velocity also in the axial direction, and this led to large fluctuations in the intensity in the course of expansion. So on the second stage, it's again a linear problem with this initial condition. So the initial wave function has some modulation in the z direction. This problem is completely analogous to what is known in optics as a phase screen problem. You send in a plane wave onto a thin screen whose refraction index fluctuates in the plane. So initially, and then the wave goes out. So close to the plane, the intensity is homogeneous, but the phase, there is this imprint of phase due to the passage through this thin plate. When you look further, this intensity fluctuation in phase will manifest itself in fluctuation of intensity, and these can be very strong fluctuations, which results in caustics. And when I say fluctuation, this imprint does not have to be random. It can be some simple sinusoid sine function. In any case, you develop strong fluctuation in intensity and caustics, kind of singularities. So that what we checked. Maybe this I can skip, and I'll show you an experiment. So this is experiment coming from the group of Randy Hewlett. Again, they did exactly what I have described. This is the condensate initially in the trap. This is this density profile of the condensate. It's a cigar shape. We're looking at z direction, and in radial direction it is strongly confined. And then so initially here, for instance, there are some very small fluctuations of density, and this is the picture of the same of the condensate after expansion, 8 milliseconds. Nothing much happens. Here the fluctuations are of the initial density fluctuation in the trap are a bit larger, and after the expansion they are already quite strong. The strongest effects it is here when the initial density fluctuations, this is the case, this is g, this is h. So the modulation of the potential of the random potential now reaches half mu, half of the chemical potential of the condensate. And after 8 milliseconds, you have quite strong, rather strong fluctuations. And if this initial random potential is even stronger, again, there is almost nothing, because this is already a fragmented condensate, and fragmented condensate does not develop strong fluctuations after expansion. Well, we have also looked at the problem with the strictly one-dimensional gas. When the condensate is, the confinement in radial direction is extremely strong, so that all atoms go into the lowest state of this harmonic potential. Then it's one-dimensional problem. So we are talking now one-dimensional problem of interacting bosons, and in the limit of strong interaction, it can be mapped on. This is the Tonks-Girardot problem. It can be mapped on non-interacting fermions. So here, Gross-Peteyevsky is not applicable at all. So we have to do really the many-body problem. But well, one can. So also the other thing that now the phase should be imprinted by a short pulse that is applied to the condensate, because it will not develop by itself under this radial expansion. So this is the initial many body wave function. This is the ground state wave function, and then all the potentials are switched off, and one can study this wave function, evolution of the many-body wave function with time. And well, let me skip all the details of the calculation and just give you the conclusion that that for this case of strictly one-dimensional system, caustics will be strongly suppressed by interaction. Everything depends on this Heeling length. So for weak interaction, the Heeling length is large, much larger than the interparticle distance, and one can observe strong effects, caustics in the expansion. In the other limit, strong interaction, Tonks limit, no caustics. So let me conclude. Well, we know a lot about disorder in solid state physics, and I showed you some example of effect of disorder on matter waves, on Bose-Einstein condensate, both in equilibrium and out of equilibrium. And there are many specific things which are specific for this condensate. I didn't talk about fermions, but there are similar work also for fermions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Going back to the pictures you showed about the caustics, the experiments, I noticed that the wave packet overall doesn't expand. Are they switching off only the random potential but not the trap? Is that what they're doing? Or is there something I'm missing, perhaps?
Well, here they switch off everything. So the
left to right is time, right? So it's from 0 to 8 milliseconds, and the size of the trap, if anything, shrinks.
Yeah, same. What?
Got shorter, your packet. Not longer. You thought it should expand.
Well, it does not expand much in the Z direction. It expands in the radial direction. In the Z direction, it only develops this large intensity fluctuation.
Talking about last line, he's saying that we have fragmented condensate, then pieces are not coherent, and then there is no caustics because of that. Interference, there is no interference.
leads to this.
Yes, well, I think it's a bit more complicated than that, because even non-coherent condensate still interfere. There were experiments. I mean, if you have two condensates prepared in different traps, they don't know each of the other, you release them, when they come, you take the picture, you see fringes.
What is your interpretation? Mine is bad.
So our interpretation was that that let me think. Well, I'm not sure.
This is probably off the normal path, but you know, in electron systems with model disorders, we have also atypical localized states like Lipschitz states. Is there any chance of seeing something like that in the atomic systems?
Yes, these things do exist. So if you have some, say, sufficiently strong disorder and low density of particles, then the particle will... Well, but like here, well, it's still, fragmentation is perhaps not yet Lipschitz tails, because if you lower the density still further, then you will really have, you cannot speak even of a condensate anymore, but you will have just clusters of bosons localized in these deep traps. This is sort of Lipschitz tails, but and the same for fermions. But again, the specific thing here is that the potential is, it's very far from this white noise potential. So there are some specific things for these tails. And also for bosons, you have nonlinearity. So you have to talk about Lipschitz tails in the presence of interactions.
One comment building on Ravin's question, I think it's fair to say that the least interacting the bosons are, the more you're sensitive to Lipschitz tails or rare events, the more repulsive they are, the more the density is smoothened and the least you're sensitive to this, in a way. The question I had was when you do the Tong-Girardot limit, but maybe I misunderstood, at some point you were showing N of K, the single particle, correlation, but this is difficult to compute with Tong-Girardot because you cannot map the hardcore bosons onto fermions for single particles. I mean, so did I misunderstood, and were you just focusing on density operators, which can be easily?
So you.
Yeah, the N of P, which is the single particle.
Yes.
This is difficult to compute with the even in the hardcore limit. So.
There was some work in. You can compute it in the limit of large P and small P.
Usually without the order. So I was just wondering whether this is something you were looking at or whether.
No, that we simply were using the expressions from the literature for this N of P. I think it goes like 1 over P to the 4th in the limit of large P. It was worked out, I think, by Maxim Olshany and Astraharchik. There is some work.
Okay, there are some expressions, yes.
Yes, but, well, one expression which covers all values of the momentum. But. There are some limiting expressions.
Yeah. Any more questions? So, let's thank all the speakers today.